tonight. Our main event, live on Monday Night Raw, John Cena versus the world's largest athlete and the man who knocked him out of Survivor Series, The Big Show.
This is like a WrestleMania match, Michael.
And again, I listen to the audience, and it's important to listen to the audience and give them exactly what they want.
Give them exactly what they want.
But I think we're giving them exactly what they want.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
You said you haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 359 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, December 14, 2014, TLC Sunday. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you to everybody who is listening to this podcast through the SolidMonster.com, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, or Stitcher Radio. I thank you for taking time out of your weekend to listen to me ramble on about pro wrestling. Be sure to show some love to Audible.com, one of our sponsors. You can use our custom URL, audibletrial.com/SolidMonster, to sign up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible service. They have over 150,000 titles to choose from, all sorts of books in audio format, including the new Chris Jericho book that I reviewed on my YouTube channel, Stone Cold Steve Austin's book as narrated by Austin himself, The Stone Cold Truth. And also, don't forget, Terry Funk has his book up there as well, More Than Just Hardcore, which, if you buy the book without the free trial, it's $24.95. If you use our link to sign up for the trial, you can get the book for free. Free is better than $24.95, people. So head on over there, audibletrial.com/solidmonster, and you can sample the service for 30 days and get to keep a free audiobook no matter what, whether you stick with it or not. It's a great deal. So check it out. Also got to give a shout out to the people who have donated to the podcast this week through PayPal. It is the holiday season, after all. You can make a donation in someone else's name, even, and get them a shout-out. Shout-outs here for Luis Hercules Hernandez, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Playboy Tiago Lorero, Damn Straight Michael Dorsey. I love Damn Straight Dorsey. Radiant Ray Wrighton, who is also the lady seen on our Twitter and Facebook pages modeling our Sound Off shirts. Short Fuse Sean Simpson, Elliot Roundhouse Richards, John Whip Your Ass Wilson, Justin Real Deal Reidenbog, Joseph Hellraiser Harley, The Last Outlaw, Andrew Jelinus, Samuel the Slayer Cipperoni, Sacramento King Kyle Fisher, Jawbreaker Aaron Cerny, and Mentally Unstable Matt Cotter. Thank you all who made a donation to the podcast this week. Very much appreciated. You can do so on thesolidmonster.com. The PayPal box is on the right-hand side. And you are free to give whatever you want, however often you wish. That is the easiest and most direct way to show your support for the Sound Off. Also got to mention here, our Pro Wrestling Tee store is back up. It had been down for a few days, thanks to CM Punk, who now has his own store. He broke the whole site. So now we're back online. Again, we have over 10 different designs, 11 different designs actually up in our store right now. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. Head over there, buy a shirt, another great holiday gift idea. Now, WWE just had their Slammy Awards this past week. We are not going to do the Slammy Awards, but we are going to give out an award, and that award is for the best sound-off intro of the year. This has been a banner year in terms of those little intros you hear at the beginning of the sound-off episodes, and there have been quite a few great ones this year. So what I've done is I've gone through episodes 308 at the beginning of the year, all the way up to episode 358 this past week for the last Sound Off, and I've narrowed the field down to only the very best Sound Off intros for 2014. All of them are original works. Obviously, many of them make use of various clips from Raw and such, but these were not lifted from anywhere on the net. They are intros that I put together myself. Or in the case of the Turn It Off and Talking Solid Monster Doll intros, those were the result of the fantastic work of one Noah Mark. So he deserves credit for those. But I put a lot of work into these things, and I'm happy that you guys seem to be enjoying them. They were never intended to be a weekly thing. I would do them here and there, and then one week, I would say maybe 14 or 15 episodes back, I did one, and then I did another, and another, and suddenly it became this weekly thing that I had never intended it to be. I'm going to have to take a break. You guys are killing me, but you guys can go on our Twitter page and on Facebook I don't have a URL to read to you here. It's a custom URL that I put together. It will take you directly to the voting poll. Voting is now open. You will find the link on Twitter, at Solomonster. Head over there and check it out. Follow me on there. Or you can go on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. I'll put a link to it up as well on our fan page and in the private group on Facebook. So that is where you can find the link. You can only vote one time. Voting ends at 10 a.m. Eastern Time next Sunday, December 21st. So you guys have 1 week the voting will be open for. If you submit your vote after the deadline, it will not be counted. You have until next Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, to vote. You may vote only one time. If you try voting more than that, it may go through, but it's not going to register. So head on over to Twitter and Facebook. I have the top 10 sound-off intros of 2014. You'll find the list. Vote on the one that you like the most, and I will have the winner in hand to announce right here on the Sound Off next weekend. So definitely check that out. Very curious to see which one you guys like the most. 2014 was a great year for the Sound Off, and that the Sound Off intros were just a small part of that. By the way, if you guys happen to hear any music in the background, it's coming from some douchebag next door who decided it would be a great idea to blast music at 11 o'clock in the morning, so just ignore it. Not much I can do about that. Before we go any further, I want to take a few minutes to address something that happened this week. As you know, I appeared on Aubrey Sitterson's Straight Shoot podcast last Monday after Raw. It was my second time on there. I had a blast. I even got to show off my own custom Solomonster Slammy Award. I then had him on my channel for a Sound Off Extra the second time we've done this. And we did a preview for NXT TakeOver and the TLC pay-per-view. We had a difference of opinion on a few things, as we usually do, but I thought it made for an interesting, intelligent debate. Many of you guys seemed to enjoy it. Shortly thereafter, someone went and flagged one of Aubrey's videos on his channel, which put his account into bad standing, and that prevents him from doing any live Google Hangouts, which is the way that he does his show every week. Not cool. Whoever did it, it was a really shitty thing to do. And as I made very clear on Twitter, in no way do I condone such a thing. There's also no way to know for sure where it came from, whether it was a fan of my show or not. You can make whatever assumptions you like. There's no way of knowing for sure. Obviously, he was very upset by this. He's been trying to work with YouTube to get it sorted out. Interestingly, he did get a response from YouTube, which is that when the video in question of his was flagged, YouTube then reviews the video to see if there really is anything inappropriate about it. They detected that he was in violation of some policy they have about tags within the description of videos. It's a stupid thing, but apparently he was in violation of their terms of service. He didn't realize this until a few days later. Yet, in the meantime, he took it upon himself. Now, granted, he was very upset, as I would be. Okay, I totally understand. Look, I'd be a basket case too. I get it, and I sympathize. But he took it upon himself to make some very disrespectful comments about my audience. Now, I didn't say anything publicly about it because I try not to conduct my business that way out in the open, at the expense of others. I took the high road. I said nothing because the last thing I wanted to do was pile on the guy. He's having a shitty week because of one troll on YouTube. You know, they decided that they didn't like what the guy had to say. Just because you disagree with someone, that doesn't give you the right to try to shut them down. We can have a difference of opinions and agree to disagree while at the same time having an intelligent dialogue. So I chose the high road, which is apparently a road less traveled by others. And I found myself and my show subjected to a lot of unfair criticism. Now, I made it very clear, the actions of one person does not represent me or my audience as a whole. One bad apple does not spoil the bunch. Who's to say they're even a fan of me or my show? We did a video talking about TLC predictions for a pay-per-view that was coming up this weekend. A video that was tagged so that people on YouTube looking for similar videos could search for it. Maybe somebody saw a link to the video, they listened to it, they didn't like what Aubrey had to say, and they decided to be immature about it, and they did what they did. There's no way of knowing. It was a shitty thing to do, and that person should be ashamed. But for me to sit here and be sent email after email from my own listeners about what's being said, and for me to see some of the comments on my own Twitter timeline about how a lot of my listeners are mouth-breathing children and/or trolls, and to have messages directed at me publicly that belong in a private forum is not cool. It's actually very disrespectful. And in some ways, it's no better than the troll who caused this whole mess in the first place. So then I see a comment about the sound off extra that we did and how he felt he couldn't get a word in edgewise and I was talking over him and how it was more of a monologue than a dialogue, which is hilarious because listening to it back, it sounded like just the opposite. And a lot of you guys were very upset because you felt I kept being trampled over. But to see those kind of comments made publicly in a public forum, I mean, really, it's a slap in my face. And it's an insult to me. And I said nothing about it because I didn't want to pile on the poor guy and make a bad situation worse for him. Aubrey's a good dude. He doesn't deserve what happened to him. But that does not give him or anybody else the right to talk shit about me or my show. I would never, ever do that to someone else or their show. Even if that's how I really felt, I know enough not to hurl insults like that in a public forum because that could be detrimental to them or their show. And that's not something I care to do. I guess we just have a different ways of conducting our business. That's a shame. When he asked me to do his show again, the plan was for me to be a guest on his one-year anniversary show this week. That was the original plan. I'd be on his show this Monday, the night after TLC. That's what we had agreed to. And then someone bailed on him, for whatever reason, and he came to me in a bind asking for a favor if I wouldn't mind doing the show a week early. And I told him, no problem. I'm happy to do it because the dude was in a tough spot and I wanted to help him out. I didn't tell him I had an early morning meeting at work the next day. Okay, it's a lot easier for him to do these things being on the West Coast than it is for me being here on the East Coast. But I agreed to do it because I wanted to help the guy out. I didn't mind. And boy, do I look like a fool now. So then we do this show on Wednesday, and in the process of converting the video, my laptop overheats and shuts itself down. This has been happening a lot more of late, which has me worried, but everything was saved. I told him, look, here's what I'll do. I'll wake up early the next morning, and I'll do the conversion before I have to leave to go to work. So that way, it'll be up, and we can cross-promote the two videos the way that we wanted to. Okay, we can link our two videos together, no problem. I didn't get to bed until after 1 a.m. I woke up at 5 so that I could get this done, which is what I did. That's the timeline of events. So you could see how I might take offense to people making these passive-aggressive comments about my audience and my show, which, I mean, let's be honest, they're really directed at me, even if that wasn't the intent. I am my show. I am my audience. You insult them, you insult me. And after going through all of that stuff I just talked about, you could see how I would be caught off guard by those comments. It's a cheap shot, and I don't appreciate it. To go out there and make these sweeping generalizations about my audience is not fair. There are thousands of people who listen to this show every single week. A few trolls on YouTube or a small sample of people from a Facebook group or whatever the case may be does not represent my overall audience. He's been doing Straight Shoot for a year. Well, I've been doing the Sound Off for 7 years. And I can tell you that in those 7 years, I have heard from and interacted with scores of good, decent, intelligent folks that do not represent the kind of person that would do something like what happened to him this week. And I can't tell you how many people I hear from who have been listening to my show since day one, from the very first episode. And these are people I enjoy speaking to who are very respectful, who don't always agree with everything I have to say, but people who would never conduct themselves in such a way. Someone like Sean from Chester, England, who I just got an email from yesterday, who had his house burglarized on the same day that all of this nonsense went down. Trashed the place, they trampled all over his Christmas gifts, stole a laptop and a car. He's had a pretty shitty few days too. And Sean, you know, I'm sure he's listening, that sucks. And I'm very sorry to hear that. And if listening to this podcast helps take your mind off things for the next 90 minutes or 2 hours, then it's all worth it. But it's people like Sean that make this show run, and I'll be damned if I'm going to sit back and let somebody crap all over him and everyone else who listens to my show. I love my audience. My audience is fucking great. And I'm going to stick up for them when I need to, and this is one of those times. So if somebody has something to say to me, the way to do it is in private, not by making broad statements in public about what a bunch of mouth-breathing, contrarian assholes they are. Because I would never say that about someone else's audience, even if that's how I really felt. like I said, I chose to take the high road. I had no interest in piling on. Dude didn't deserve the hand that was dealt to him, but that does not excuse comments like that. There is a right way to do things and a wrong way to do things, and the whole thing, really, at the end of the day, is just very disappointing. And it's a shame there won't be any further collaboration, but the video in question is still up. For those who haven't seen it, it's a good debate, I think. An intelligent back and forth on NXT TakeOver. We do predictions for TLC. We also talk about the biggest pro wrestling stories of 2014, what each of us think was the single biggest story in wrestling all year, and there have been a lot of them. So it's a good discussion. You can check it out on our YouTube channel, and you can make up your own mind about who's talking over who. And just be respectful. Don't be like the troll who started this whole thing. I know you guys are better than that, even if other people don't. And I know many of you were still upset over the comments that were made. I would ask you to just leave it alone. As far as I'm concerned, it's over and done with. It's a dead issue. This will be the only statement I make about this. I'm not wasting any more of my time talking about this. But I just wanted you guys to know the truth about what's been going on, about why there won't be any more videos like that. And just know that you guys are the fucking best. The real Sound Off fans. You know who you are. And don't let anybody tell you any different. Now, as far as TLC predictions go, again, I already did them on Thursday's show with Aubrey. You could check out the video. It's on our YouTube channel. I'll run through them really quick here. I do have to say this. These guys on the show tonight have some pretty big shoes to fill. They have some pretty big expectations to meet after that NXT show. Unless they want to be showed up by the developmental crew, I think it might be a little extra motivation for them to go out there tonight and have a kick-ass show. One thing I did forget in the predictions I did with Aubrey in the extra video was completely neglected to mention the tag team title match on the show, which is Miz and Mizdow defending against the Usos. My pick in that match, Miz and Mizdow retain. The other picks from the show, we'll start from the bottom, work our way up to the top. The New Day over Golden Stardust is my pick. Nikki Bella to retain the women's title, the Divas title, over AJ Lee. Rusev over Jack Swagger. Interesting note about this, I don't know how many people noticed it, I retweeted it on my Twitter page. Apparently Lana, early this morning, posted a photo of a new European Championship belt, which is basically the old European title, but it's updated with the new WWE logo. It says World Wrestling Entertainment on there, so I don't know why they would go through the expense of creating a new belt unless they were going to use it, so that tells me we may see Rusev coming out with the European belt in place of the U.S. title, possibly as early as tonight at the TLC pay-per-view, so that might be something to watch for. I pick Rusev over Swagger, Ryback over Kane in the chairs match is my pick, Big Show over Eric Rowan in the stairs match, whatever the fuck that is, Luke Harper is my pick to retain the Intercontinental title in the ladder match over Dolph Ziggler. Dolph can do better than that. Dean Ambrose, he needs a big win a hell of a lot more than Bray Wyatt does. Basically because a Bray Wyatt loss does not mean as much to him as a win would for Dean Ambrose. I talked about this on the Sound Off Extra that we did. I can't even remember the last big match that Dean Ambrose won. I guess it would have been the contract on a pole match with John Cena, which sucked. It was a bad match. It was a bullshit finish. It took four guys beating up Cena for Dean to win. So I don't even count that. He needs a big win, and I think tonight's the night. I think they're going to have a kick-ass match. So Ambrose is my pick. And the main event of the show, John Cena, Seth Rollins in a tables match. John Cena is my pick. Of course, the stipulation is that if Cena loses, he does not get his championship match with Brock Lesnar. I figure Randy Orton will probably rear his head here in this match. He's been gone for a while. He's due to come back any day now. It would make more sense, even though I would love to see Orton and Lesnar much more than I would Cena-Lesnar. I would much rather see Dolph and Lesnar in a title match at the Rumble to kind of bridge the gap between now and Mania, even though I know he would lose. I would be into any of those matches more than Cena-Brock, but we're getting Cena-Brock. And I figure Orton comes back, he costs Rollins the match, so we're left with Cena-Brock at the Rumble. Orton and Rollins can continue their feud, it all makes sense. Those are my picks for the TLC pay-per-view. I think it'll be a great show, if for no other reason, because like I said, I don't think these guys are going to want to get shown up by the developmental crew. And so in the end, we all end up winners when guys are extra motivated. So that's the show tonight. Want to talk a little bit here about Ring of Honor Final Battle. I did go to their pay-per-view. I was in attendance last Sunday at Terminal 5 in New York City. That was their first time running the venue. Terminal 5 is a dance club. It's got, I think, three different levels. At least two, maybe three. I had never been there before. It's an interesting venue. I'm not sure it really works all that well for Ring of Honor, although the setup they had for it was very cool in terms of the entranceway and the blue lighting and everything else. So my guess is it's not the last time we will see them there. The whole reason they left the Manhattan Center, they basically got priced out of it. So unless they've decided to pay the money and go back to the Manhattan Center, I don't know that they will be going back there. I know there were a lot of very pissed off people who purchased general admission tickets who did not realize that meant they would be standing. A lot of people very upset about that. Thankfully, we didn't have that issue. We paid for third row ringside seats. Ended up being right at the end of the row by the aisleway, so we had really kick-ass seats. It was a blast. I had a lot of fun. Before the show started, I don't think this aired. Maybe it aired on the pre-show, if there was a pre-show, but they did a ceremony. The whole roster came out. They honored Kari Silken, the former owner of Ring of Honor, who he sold 100% of his stake to Sinclair, but I think they keep him around more as kind of this ceremonial figure. They honored him with a Lifetime Achievement Award, so that was very nice. Just in terms of the show, it opened with a four-way match. Mark Briscoe, Caprice Coleman, Jimmy Jacobs, and Hansen. Hansen has become a singles guy now because his brother has been out with an injury. This guy, he looks like one of the old Highlanders. Remember Robbie and I forgot the name of his brother, but that's kind of who he reminds me of. Big dude. I mean, looking at this guy up close, he is an enormous man. And this match, to me, damn near stole the show. Were it not for the Young Bucks, this match stole the show. I mean, it was all action. It was great. I think Hansen, I don't even remember. I think Hansen got the win. But it was just incredible action from start to finish. I was very impressed by this match. I didn't think I would be. Roderick Strong and Adam Page, another good match. I would hate to wrestle Roderick Strong. The guy is a beast. Just watching him wrestle, it hurts me. So that was also a very good match. I believe it was a ref stoppage. He had him in the stronghold, would not let go. The ref called for the bell. Michael Elgin and Tommaso Ciampa. A good match for what it was. Kind of disappointing, I guess. I was expecting more. The crowd kind of crapped on it. They're not fans of Elgin at all. I got to be honest with you, neither am I. I mean, he does some impressive power moves, but there's nothing about Elgin that really jumps out to me and says, wow, this guy is must-see. So this match was kind of a letdown. Then came the Young Bucks, and they just blew everybody else out of the water. The Young Bucks and ACH against Daniels and Kazarian and Cedric Alexander. The Young Bucks, I mean, what can you say about them? I mean, they're just so much fun to watch. They know their gimmick. They play it up so well. My whole section, this guy brought party hats. It was the super kick party section. People have differing opinions on the Young Bucks. Are they great wrestlers? Are they spot monkeys or whatever? All I know is that when you watch them live, they're a lot of fun. I forgot who they wrestled. They may have wrestled Red Dragon on the last Ring of Honor show I was at, which was the joint show at New Japan at the Manhattan Center in May. It's just a lot of fun, and there was so much action I can't even begin to describe in this match. It stole the show. It was the highlight of the night. So many crazy, wacky things. ACH is another one. He's incredible to watch live, just an incredible performer. He and the Young Bucks get the win. Just an amazing match. I don't know what more I can say about it. Just insane. R.D. Evans and Moose. They did an angle here where Veda Scott came out. She turned on R.D. Evans, helped Moose win. Moose is another one. Big dude. Former NFL guy. Big dude in real life. And he kind of impressed me here. He only has very limited experience. He's still training to become a wrestler. And for a guy that doesn't have that much experience, he's not bad. He really isn't that bad. I think he's got a lot of potential. Television title match, Jay Lethal defending against Matt Sydal, the former Evan Bourne, who looks to be in incredible physical condition. He's as good as ever. These guys had what I thought was a damn good match. Lethal keeps the championship in the end. He's had that belt for a while now. I don't know exactly how long, but it's been a long time. Tag team title match was Red Dragon defending against the Time Splitters from New Japan, Alex Shelley and Kushida. Another great match. I believe Red Dragon got the win. Again, I'm a little fuzzy on this because it's been a week, but just a great match. And then the main event was a fight without honor. Adam Cole, Jay Briscoe for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Sick, sick match. A match that saw a staple gun used and Adam Cole super kicking a mouthful of thumbtacks out of Jay Briscoe's mouth at one point. Jay Briscoe did win in the end with the Jay Driller. He is still the Ring of Honor champion. Apparently that was not the original plan from what I've read. They were going to put the title on Adam Cole, but they knew he had some kind of shoulder injury. They did not know if he would need surgery. Unfortunately, it looks like he does. He announced on Friday night at the PWG show that Adam Cole did, that he is going to need shoulder surgery, so he's going to be out for a while. He actually had a match on that show with Cedric Alexander, even though he was hurt, and then he announced the injury. And I think they tried to play it up like he got hurt in the match with Jay Briscoe. Who's to say? Maybe the injury was aggravated, but from what I've read, he already had the injury, and maybe they'll attribute it to Jay Briscoe. And it's smart, because depending on how long he's out for, I don't know if Briscoe will still have the title when Adam Cole comes back, but if he does, and even if he doesn't, it's a ready-made feud for him when he comes back. So all the best to Adam Cole. He's great. I think it's kind of crazy that WWE hasn't snatched him up already. I think he fits the prototype perfectly. He's very well-spoken. He's got the look. He's not like a big guy, but he's a great performer, and I'm sure at some point he'll be in WWE. It's just a matter of time. So I had a blast at the Ring of Honor show, as I always do. Another big piece of Ring of Honor news that broke this week is that Alberto Del Rio is coming to Ring of Honor in 2015. They officially announced that Del Rio will come in as Alberto El Patron, the former Alberto Del Rio. He can't use that name anymore, obviously. He'll be debuting with the company on January 3rd. At a television taping in Nashville. They also announced three other dates for him, so it's not just a one-shot deal. He won't be there at every show, but he'll be there, for example, more than Brock Lesnar is for WWE. He is also the champion right now down in AAA, so if he's going back and forth between the two promotions, I guess that means things didn't work out with TNA, since he was claiming he'd be working AAA and TNA next year, and nobody could figure out how that would even be possible. Apparently, he still might be headed to Lucha Underground. I think he was the El Jefe person that Conan was mentioning on the show a couple of times in those segments with Dario Cueto. He would mention El Jefe, the boss, and I think Del Rio is the one he was referring to. But who knows what'll happen with Lucha Underground. They've got more tapings next month. They actually just did their highest audience to date on the El Rey network, 34,000 viewers according to Nielsen, which doesn't sound like much. It really isn't, but for that network it is. But the thing is, and I think I read this in the Observer, the production is costing the network hundreds of thousands of dollars with very little return on investment so far. They recently canceled one of their other new shows that I think Eve Torres had something to do with. I don't exactly know what the show is about, but they just canceled that show. So I do worry. I worry about the future of Lucha Underground when I read stuff like that. I really hope that doesn't happen to them, but it's also not my money that the network is spending. And if I was going through hundreds of thousands of dollars without anything to show for it, then my name would be Bob Carter. As far as Del Rio goes, you know, I admit I am not the biggest Alberto Del Rio fan. I was never a huge fan of his, but he did have some great matches in WWE. You can't deny it. I just found the character boring after a while. They stripped him of the car and the intro that kind of made him unique. And then he was just another guy. And the other problem is I got tired of seeing him in there with the same guys over and over and over again. Del Rio and Sheamus, my God. They work well together, but holy shit, how many times can we see those two guys in the ring together? I think Del Rio and Jay Briscoe, Del Rio and Roddy Strong just kind of stiffen the shit out of one another. That sounds like it could be a lot of fun. Now, a lot of you guys didn't even want me to talk about Monday Night Raw this week. I can't say I blame you, but what we'll do here is we'll go through some of the key things on the show. I'm not going to go through the entire thing because it was a boring show and there's no reason for me to sit here going through it. Let's talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and there was quite a bit of the latter on this show. I think we all deserve a slammy, quite frankly, for sitting through 3 hours of this show every single week on a show that was built around a John Cena versus Big Show main event, a match that JBL said was WrestleMania worthy. Yes, WrestleMania 20, perhaps. It was the Slammy Awards, and so here are the key winners. I'm not going through every category, but the key ones here. Tag Team of the Year, as voted on by the fans, supposedly, the Usos. NXT Superstar of the Year, Sami Zayn. Breakout Star of the Year, Dean Ambrose. Oh my God, shocking moment of the year was Brock Lesnar ending the streak of WrestleMania 30, the only possible choice. Diva of the Year, AJ Lee. LOL moment of the year, the booking. No, I'm kidding. Damian Mizdow as Miz's stunt double. I almost did a Lillian Garcia mistake there. He's not Sandow anymore. Match of the Year, Team Cena versus Team Authority at Survivor Series. That award was actually presented by Ricky Steamboat. Very appropriate and very cool to see him. extreme moment of the year. Chris Jericho diving off the top of the steel cage. Boy, has the definition of extreme changed over the last 15 years or what? And the superstar of the year, Roman Reigns. And boy, was there a lot of debate about that one. So those are the Slammy Awards they gave out. I love how the first Slammy of the night went to Sting for the This Is Awesome moment of the year, and he wasn't there to accept it. The second Slammy of the night for Surprise Return of the Year went to the Ultimate Warrior, who obviously was not there to accept it. And then the third Slammy of the night for Shocking Moment of the Year rightfully went to Brock Lesnar for ending the streak at WrestleMania, and Brock wasn't there either. They had Paul Heyman there to accept on his behalf. By that point, I was just wondering if any of the winners would be there to accept their trophies. I mean, after a while, it got kind of ridiculous. And then I think AJ won for, like, Diva of the Year, and it was like, oh, finally, somebody who's actually there. I want to talk about the Natalya-Charlotte match. I won't dwell on it too much because it's not worth it. But they had a match. They wanted some NXT influence on the show. I figured there would be some NXT representation. I was very surprised we didn't get anything with Zayn and Neville. If you remember, before the last special, which was the Fatal 4-Way Takeover, they actually had a tag team match. I think it was Neville and Zayn against Tyson Kidd and Tyler Breeze. So I thought there would actually be more, or maybe instead of having Charlotte, it would be Sammy and Adrian. But instead they had Charlotte. They trotted her out there. She had the belt. They acknowledged her as the NXT Women's Champion. She had a match with Natalya. It was a 3-minute match. And she lost. Charlotte lost, getting rolled up after attempting a figure four leg lock. And Tyson Kidd, they did the thing where he kind of blocked his wife up on the turnbuckles, and he was posing like he just won the fucking main event of WrestleMania. We've seen that before. It's very entertaining. But the question is, did they have to do that here? The answer is no. Obviously, the answer was no. The match itself was good while it lasted. It was as good as a 3-minute women's match could possibly be. They didn't give them any time at all. I just did not understand the finish at all, whatsoever. And if you read between the lines on Triple H's NXT conference call that he did on Wednesday, he clearly did not either. Okay, he didn't understand it either. He talked about there being time constraints affecting things. They were given more time, the women were, but as things went on, they lost the time. I guess maybe if Raw were 4 hours, they would have enough time. Why not give them an extra hour? So he said there's a process. Charlotte was used on the show. It wasn't him, though, as far as what they did. It was one of his writers. Triple H said he told his team to try to get some time on the show to promote the special. He was asked how he felt about Charlotte being on the show, and he said he was fine with it. He said he found out the day before what would be on Raw, what they had planned, but he was not involved in the actual planning this time like he was the last time when they did the tag match on Raw with the four guys I mentioned before. He said, as far as the decision about who goes over, he says those decisions are heavily debated, and it is what it is. He said when Charlotte comes back, she will be presented in a different way. It will be a while before we see her again, meaning that people will forget about what they saw on Monday night. Holy shit, it is what it is. How many times have you heard me use that expression on this podcast? And I use it when I disagree with something and sort of just have to live with the fact that it is what it is. And here's Triple H doing the exact same thing. So you know, he doesn't agree with the way that she was booked on that show. But it's Vince. It is so obviously a Vince McMahon call. And I love how he basically took Vince and the writers and threw him under the bus on this call and said, well, I didn't have anything to do with that. You got to ask them. I heard that. I was like, holy shit. He actually gave us the it is what it is treatment. That says it all. Luke Harper and Eric Rowan had a match completely unannounced on this show. Their first match, it should have been a bigger deal than it was made out to be on this show. Just a complete waste, I think, of their first encounter just to throw it out there like that. Not that they even did an appropriate breakup of the Wyatt family. I mean, the booking on this the whole way through has been completely lazy. But they had a match. Match ended when Harper pushed a ladder into Rowan's shoulder outside the ring. He just kind of grabbed the ladder or bumped into it and pushed it into Rowan, and so that was a DQ. So yet another lame DQ finish to a Luke Harper match. We had Bray Wyatt doing a promo. He was interrupted by sirens in the arena, and we see an ambulance pull in next to the stage, and Dean Ambrose busts out of the back wearing a neck brace that he would eventually rip off. remarkable healing powers that Dean Ambrose has. Let me say, I have to tell you, not even so much as a scratchy voice after having his trachea crushed, we were told, a week earlier, less than a week earlier. It wasn't even a full week. And, you know, it took me a few days, but I finally figured out why this actually does make sense. I don't know if you noticed this. Actually, I'm pretty sure you did. But when Ambrose busted out of that ambulance, there was a shit ton of smoke coming from inside the ambulance. And you might ask yourself, is that ambulance on fire? Why the hell is there so much smoke? And then I remembered Rob Van Dam was one of the guest presenters that night at the Slammy Awards. So you see, RVD was clearly assisting Dean Ambrose with the power of some medicinal healing, which resulted in that plume of smoke that you saw, which also resulted in Dean Ambrose feeling no pain, hence his showing no ill effects of the crushed trachea. See, at least I attempted to come up with a semi-logical explanation for this, even if WWE doesn't think you deserve one, so you're welcome. Anyway, they brawled, Ambrose tossed a chair into the ring that landed right on top of Bray Wyatt's head. Wyatt bailed, Ambrose cut a promo on him, again, sounding none the worse for wear. Usos and Ryback against Miz and Mizdow and Kane. I cannot even do this justice for the greatness of Damian Mizdow. He was on fire during this match. He mimed at one point. He mimed a delayed vertical suplex by doing a handstand and propping himself up against the edge of the ring on the outside. Just unbelievable. Ryback pinned Miz with the shell shock for the win. Mizdow is a guy who has appeal across every demographic. I cannot tell you how many casual fans I know who may not like much about the current product. I mean, why would they? Aside from John Cena or Roman Reigns' hair. Okay, you know who you are, Natalie. But everyone loves Damian Mizdow. He is just fantastic. Fantastic. So then Roman Reigns was presented with the Superstar of the Year award. Conveniently enough, he was there, although he's been to a lot of the recent shows, so it's not all that, you know, uncommon for him to be backstage at these shows. But he, you know, look, could he have won it legitimately? Apparently the voting was legit, so believe what you want to believe. It is what it is. They are giving him the big push. It conveniently worked out for them that he got voted Superstar of the Year, and he's going to come back, and he's probably going to wrestle Brock for the title at WrestleMania, and I hope he gets over, and I hope it works out. Because I don't hate Roman Reigns. I like Roman Reigns, even though people are, you know, they're starting to crap on him, of course. Oh, he's getting the John Cena push, and I think that's very unfair. I want to see the guy succeed. I think he's got the tools to succeed. And I even said recently that I think that injury, while I'm sure did not feel very good, I think that injury was maybe the best thing that could have happened to him. Because if people are already starting to crap on Roman Reigns and they're like, oh, Roman Reigns, imagine had he not been injured and had he been getting the big Superman push for the last 2 or 3 months, people would be even more tired of him. He'd be getting booed at all the buildings by now. I think him being away led to what you saw on Monday night. There's a lot of Roman Reigns fans out there. I mean, they cheered him big time when he came out. I honestly think that had more to do with the fact they were not expecting him to be there. You know, Sting won an award. He wasn't there. Brock's music hit and Paul Heyman came out instead. Chris Jericho wasn't there. So when Roman Reigns actually walked out, it was like, holy shit, this guy's actually here. And it was a surprise. And I think that's why he got the big reaction the way that he did. But, you know, he's got a lot of fans out there. Is it all that unrealistic to think he could have won? No, not really. I mean, I was very surprised that, Dean Ambrose or even Daniel Bryan, even though he's been out most of the year, I was surprised that they didn't win. But at the same time, my trust level when it comes to trusting WWE on things is maybe at an all-time low. So who the hell knows? It's their show. They can fix it if they want to. If it was legitimate, then great. Who cares? At the end of the day, it's a Slammy Award. Who gives a shit? John Cena and The Big Show was your main event on this show, featuring the worst sleeper hold I have ever seen in my entire life. It was so embarrassing. I mean, you watch this, and then you watch that NXT show 3 days later, and ask yourself, who deserves to be in developmental? Match ended on a DQ finish. What else is new? Seth Rollins and J&J Security ran in. Dolph Ziggler made the save for Cena, which is certainly different. Big Show woke up, knocked both guys out with the KO punch. That brought out Eric Rowan, who got attacked from behind by Luke Harper. Ryback ran down, took out Big Show in a Harper. Kane came out with a steel chair. He attacked Ryback. Back in the ring, Big Show tried for a chokeslam on Dolph. Dolph escaped. He ended up being face-planted, face-first through a table by Luke Harper. Seth Rollins curb-stomped John Cena. Then he, Mercury, and Noble, Shield 2.0, as JBL refers to them, gave John Cena the triple powerbomb through the announce table, and the heels stood tall to end the show. Total chaos. This actually was much better than the Cena-Big Show match itself. I thought it was actually a pretty fun finish to what was a long, boring, forgettable edition of Monday Night Raw. Seems to be par for the course recently, unfortunately. I hope that as they head into the Rumble, and Rumble WrestleMania season is always the highlight of the year, hopefully they'll get their ass in gear. They've got a long gap, I think like 6 or 7 weeks, between TLC and the Rumble, so maybe they'll have something special planned for the night after TLC edition of Raw. Chris Jericho is going to be there Monday night as the guest host. Maybe they've got something up their sleeve. I expect Brock Lesnar to finally be on the show. That'll probably be the big thing of the night. They've really got to get going with these shows. I mean, now they're heading into the Christmas season, so I don't expect anything huge to happen over the next few weeks. Maybe they'll come up with something special for the first Raw of the year, maybe. This show, though, when you watch it, it's lifeless. There's no life to it. You know what I mean? And 3 hours doesn't help. So, unfortunately, you end up with shows that kind of slog along, and they're very forgettable, and they're just tough to sit through. And that leads us to a different show that I'm going to get to right now. NXT TakeOver Revolution, a show so good that Triple H got himself a fruit basket out of it. Yes, the users of Reddit on the Reddit Squared Circle page were so happy and so impressed by this NXT show that one user got the bright idea to band together and pay for an edible arrangements fruit basket to send to Triple H at WWE headquarters. Unfortunately for them, they didn't realize that Triple H was still down in Orlando at the NXT television taping, so he didn't get it. But Triple H did acknowledge it on Twitter and actually posted photos of the fruit basket, which was eaten by their archivist guy. So at least it didn't go to waste. I laughed. I thought that was awesome. And whoever's responsible for it, whether it's Triple H or whoever, they did a hell of a job. And that is an understatement right there. There was nothing developmental about this show. There was nothing minor league about this show. This is what wrestling should be. This is it. It should be fun. It should be fresh. It should have action. It should have drama. It should have announcing that does not detract from the show, but actually adds to it, or at least stays out of the way, except for Alex Riley, who gets on my nerves. It should build new stories. It should climax existing stories. It should feel important, like wins and losses actually matter, and everybody there has a purpose. It should leave you wanting more, not less. And yeah, this was a two-hour show, whereas Raw has an extra hour to fill. But you know what? Those 2 hours breezed by like nothing on Thursday night. Kind of like how Raw used to feel all those years ago. You just hated it when that copyright notice would come on the TV screen because it meant the show was over. These days, it can't come soon enough. And those are the biggest differences between the product we see on Monday nights and the product that we see on Thursdays. And look, they don't have home run shows like this every week, but those shows week to week, by and large, are very good, and they build to these specials that we get treated to. Right now, they're 4 times a year. You know what? I could be okay with them if they wanted to bump it up to 5 or 6. I would not go beyond that. I think part of why this works so well is because you only have 4. It's like the traditional big 4 pay-per-views, right? You would use your television over the course of several months to build to these big cards. If they did NXT specials like this every single month, they would lose that special feeling. So I actually don't want to see them move to an every month format. But I, at the same time, I wouldn't mind having another 1 or 2 of these every year and then maybe kind of cap it at that. But that's part of what makes them so special. We had face paint, blood, and F-bombs galore on the show. And dives. Lots and lots of dives through the ropes. This is something I've talked about before. Way too many people doing dives. But this show also gave us the match of the year in WWE. If we are including NXT matches, as much as I loved the Shield and the Wyatt family at the Elimination Chamber I spoke too soon last week when I mentioned that is the match of the year. The match between Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville, which has been built up for months and months, is everything pro wrestling should be. I loved it. I loved everything about it, from the presentation of it, to the match itself, to the story they told, to the finish, to the post-match celebration with everybody coming out and the confetti, to the swerve with Kevin Owens at the end. Everything. All of it. I've already watched it two more times. I cannot say enough good things about it. So let's start from the beginning and we'll go through this here. My favorite show of the week. Corey Graves on the pre-show announced that his in-ring career is over. He has officially retired from in-ring competition as a result of concussions that were causing some pretty bad side effects that he didn't go into. And he has joined the NXT announce team. So not a big surprise. I think I even mentioned that last week, that he was probably going to be announcing that he was done because of concussions. There had been some talk about making him an announcer, and that's what they've done. Triple H in a video on .com surprised him with a new two-year contract. And Corey Graves multiple times talked about WWE's medical staff and how well they treated him and how on the ball they were with things. And don't think that wasn't done on purpose for all the reasons that you would think they would have him say that, because I'm sure it was. But it's a bummer. You know, it's a bummer because he was a good wrestler. I think, honestly, not that they would have made him the new CM Punk, but with the tattoos and just his body type and, I don't know, just the way he kind of carried himself, I almost feel like with Punk gone, Corey Graves could have been a guy. It may, you know, you could say maybe the appeal to the women as well. He could have filled a void, I think, that was left by a guy like a CM Punk, and promote him to the main roster. And within a couple of years, he could be that guy. Not necessarily on the same level as Punk star power wise, but I think people would have taken to him. I don't know. There's just something about him. I think he would have had that same kind of appeal. Beyond just the fact that he and Punk had tattoos. And he won't have that chance now. And he's still a young guy. I don't know how old he is. Maybe early 30s. Maybe not even. He's a young guy. And it's a shame. It's a shame that that happened. But I thought he did a damn good job for his first night on commentary, despite the F-bomb that I think I heard him drop during the main event. We'll excuse that. The other thing I noticed is, man, does he sound like Edge or what? I was listening to him, and I'm like, God, who does he sound like? He reminds me of somebody. And I'm like, fuck, it's Edge. It's like I'm listening to Edge on commentary. But I thought he did a good job. They opened the show with Kevin Owens in a match against CJ Parker. So I was half right. They did send him out there for a match to kill somebody, but it wasn't Tyson Kidd or Tyler Breeze, which is better. I actually like what they did here more than my idea, because they can actually save those other guys from matches with him down the road, although now he's a heel. Unless they want to do a heel versus heel match. But they sent Parker out there. Owens gets the win with a power bomb. I don't know if that'll be his permanent finisher, but CJ Parker came off the ropes. He grabbed Parker and threw him into the air like D'Lo Brown used to do with the lowdown power bomb. That's basically what this was, kind of. Only on the way down, he didn't sit down. It wasn't like a sit-down power bomb. He just brutally slammed the guy down for a power bomb and pinned him. So, not a bad finish. Obviously, I didn't expect them to let him use the package pile driver. Anybody who thought so, you know, is foolish. I mean, they don't allow pile drivers unless your name is Undertaker or Kane. That's just how it is. They're not going to make an exception for this guy. I don't care how safely he does it. I mean, AJ Styles does the Styles Clash safely. That doesn't mean people don't get hurt. So, not surprised at all they don't let him do the package pile driver. How hard did CJ Parker have to hit this guy in the face with that palm thrust to where he split his own hand open to the bone? One of the things that made this match so great, and I think it actually added to it, was the fact that Owens, okay, Steen got busted open in the match, his debut match, and it looked like he broke his nose or he hurt his eye, under his eye, he was bleeding all over the place. I thought it added a lot to the match, and it added a lot to the character as well, because this guy just goes in there like a badass and fights. He gets busted open, he's tasting his own blood, doesn't faze him, he still won the match. But CJ Parker went on Twitter and posted a photo of his own hand, and his hand, I mean, he had a wound that was open to the bone. He had a hole in his hand, you can actually see it. He did that on a palm thrust, it wasn't even a straight fist. Holy shit, how hard did he have to hit this guy? Lucha Dragons and the Vaudevillains for the NXT Tag Team titles. Lucha Dragons get the win. Salida del Sol by Kalisto to Simon Gotch for the win. Match was good. Probably, I can't say it was the weakest match because Baron Corbin had a 40-second match. But of all of the promoted matches, I think this was the one that was lowest on the pecking order. But even so, that doesn't mean it was a bad match. There was not a bad match on this entire show. It was just kind of there. I can't say I'm really that into either one of these teams. Ty Dillinger was sacrificed to Baron Corbin in about 40 seconds. He won with the End of Days. They had Bull Dempsey at ringside watching the match, and then they did a stare down with the two of them. So they're giving us the slow burn here. They opted not to blow off their first match on this show like I thought they would, and I'm cool with that. That's one of the things I appreciate about NXT is that they give these stories time to build. Then we had Finn Balor and Hideo Itami against The Ascension, and Finn Balor wore the body paint on the show, and it was every bit as awesome as I thought it would be. His whole entrance just screamed superstar. I mean, if this guy is not headlining WrestleMania within the next 5 years, there's something wrong with this company. He's one of the best wrestlers in the world right now. The paint is marketable, so they can make a ton of money off it with t-shirts and such. He seems like a decent enough talker, and I could see him being a big hit with the female demographic. If he was 4 inches taller, he'd be headlining WrestleMania with John Cena in 2 years. I guarantee it. But he'll have to work a little harder to get there because he's not a big guy. But I absolutely believe he can do it. He was clearly positioned as the real star here. He kind of overshadows Itami. I think that that may not be the worst thing in the world because Itami, I still feel like he hasn't clicked yet. He hasn't looked overly impressive to me. Until he does, I think it's almost a good thing to keep him linked up with Balor. Not long term, but for the time being, I think it actually works to his advantage to be associated with a guy like Balor who already is over as a big star and they work well off of one another. So I would keep them together for at least a little while longer. Itami got beaten down most of the way until he made the hot tag to Balor, who ran wild. I loved the GTS tease by Itami. He got, maybe it was Victor, up on his shoulders, and the place exploded. All he did was get him on his shoulders. He never actually did the move. The guy escaped. But the place went crazy, and that led to the finish, which was he and Balor with stereo foot stomps off the top rope on the Ascension. They pinned him and got the win. I hope they let Itami use the GTS. That might be the key. That might be the key to helping this guy get over, is by using that move. And again, it was his move. I think Punk has even admitted that he stole it from him, just like Bryant stole the flying knee from this guy. If Punk is gone, and he is, and he ain't coming back, and I can't see why they would care, why not give a nice FU to CM Punk? Let this guy use the GTS. And I have to think that the fact they would let him tease it is a sign that at some point he's going to hit the move. And when he does, the place is going to go crazy. This was a great match. I loved it. The presentation of Balor. They've got a star. He hasn't even been around maybe a full month, maybe. Actually, I guess it's been a little over a month. And they already have a superstar on their hands. I know they've been there longer. The other comment I want to make about this, because the Ascension is getting called up. And I know they've been there longer, but boy, are they calling up the wrong team. That's all I got to say. The Ascension got their first vignette on SmackDown this week, so they'll be on the main roster shortly. We could use some new tag teams, so that's fine. I don't like hate the fact they're bringing them up over these other guys, but in the video, they look like someone took Demolition and LOD and put them in Jeff Goldblum's chamber in The Fly and kind of merge their DNA together. That's the best description I could come up with. They've got very Road Warrior-esque, like Hawk-esque face paint, or at least Connor does, or maybe both of them do. And they've got these shoulder, not spiked, unfortunately, shoulder pads, but they've got shoulder pads, they've got face paint, so they're kind of changing the characters a little bit than we're used to seeing them on NXT, and maybe that's a good thing because most of the WWE audience probably has never seen these guys before, so it won't matter. But that's the first thought I had. I looked at these guys, I said, God, who took Demolition and LOD and threw them in the chamber? Roman Reigns was on this show. This was the weakest part of the whole show, in fact. I like that they had him there. I know why they did it. They wanted to make the show seem like a bigger deal by having their superstar of the year come by and endorse it. And they're pushing this narrative now. You know, he talked about in the interview, he wants to be the first NXT alum to become WWE champion. And I see a lot of people saying, oh, that's wrong. WWE, once again, rewriting history. It's Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan was the first. I know what they're doing. Daniel Bryan was on a fucking bullshit game show that's very different than the NXT we see now. So they're differentiating the NXT that aired on television that we remember and maybe would like to forget. Although, you know what? That first season was not bad, actually. They created some stars coming out of that first season. It didn't really get hokey until the second or third season, I think. But that NXT compared to NXT now was completely a throwaway. It was a television show. The NXT now, it's a full-on developmental system, so we're just parsing words here. I'm not angry at them. I don't even look at Daniel Bryan, to be honest with you, as the first NXT alum. I look at it the same way they do. I look at it as NXT in its current incarnation. And you would have to include guys like the Wyatt family and the Shield. So, like, if Bray Wyatt were to win the title, then he would be the first, right? Because he was part of that system, and then he got brought up. Daniel Bryan, it was so long ago, and NXT was such a different thing. It was only similar in name. I don't count it either, so that doesn't bother me. But that's the narrative that they're pushing now, is that Roman Reigns wants to become the first NXT alum to be WWE champion. He talked about being voted Superstar of the Year, but he sounded so phony and so robotic here. It was awful, just an awful promo. I've seen this guy talk like a normal person. He sounds so cool and casual, and he's got a quick wit about him. I mean, this is the guy that was actually going toe-to-toe with Stone Cold Steve Austin on that 2K15 roster reveal panel. Austin was making comments about him. He would come right back at Stone Cold. Not everybody can trade barbs back and forth like that with Steve Austin. So Roman Reigns is not a bad talker. The Roman Reigns we see on television is a bad talker because they give him this fake, phony bullshit dialogue. It just sounds like he's reading off cue cards. So this was not good. This did not do him any favors. He did the interview backstage with Renee Young, and you could hear the fans in the arena booing him the entire time. That's not good. Charlotte and Sasha Banks for the NXT Women's title. Stopwatch had this at 12 minutes, 10 seconds. And it was awesome. My second favorite match of the night behind the main event. Both women can be called up to television tomorrow and would fit right in. Sasha Banks impressed the hell out of me here. She has gotten so much better since the first time I saw her as a babyface last year. And Charlotte is a freak to be as good as she is with as little experience as she has. I don't know if it's genetics or her gymnastic background or both, but she already has it. She is top three as far as women they have on the entire roster, in the entire promotion. And I hate to say it, but in WWE with the Divas matches, you kind of wait for them when you watch these things to fuck up because it happens so often. I can't remember a single fuck up in this entire match. A botch or anything like that. It was like a regular match. You would watch it to enjoy it. You wouldn't watch it waiting for somebody to fuck up. It was fluid, it was smooth, it was flawless. And Charlotte went for a moonsault at one point. Sasha rolled out of the way. Charlotte landed on her feet. Didn't stumble backwards or anything like that. Landed straight down right on her feet and then did a standing senton on Sasha instead. Landed ass first right on Sasha's face. Finish saw Charlotte deliver natural selection while on the top rope. So a top rope natural selection. Got the pin. Just a fantastic match. They had the crowd with them every step of the way. The people were not bored. They were not disinterested. They were not chanting for fucking JBL and Jerry Lawler and puppies or any of that other nonsense. They were into it like every other match on the show, like the main event. They were with them every step of the way. And one other thing, we got the first of many "This is wrestling" chants during this match. And it got me thinking, and I asked this on Twitter, do baseball fans break into random chants of "this is baseball" during the games? I've never seen that before, but I think it would be kind of funny if they did. Do hockey fans chant "this is hockey" when two guys are, you know, the gloves come off and they start beating the crap out of each other on the ice? Just one of the many things that make wrestling fans unique. And then came the main event. Like I said, my match of the year in WWE, if we are lumping in NXT matches, is Adrian Neville and Sami Zayn for the NXT Championship. This match, before the bell even rang, before the match itself even started, this match felt more important than any WWE Championship match since WrestleMania. And that includes Cena and Brock at SummerSlam, which I loved. And that was a big match. But this felt more important than anything since Daniel Bryan got the championship in, I guess it was April. Because they built that thing up for so long, and everybody was just waiting. They were just chomping at the bit, waiting for this guy to win the belt. That was a big deal. I can't put this ahead of that. But this was the closest thing to that. One thing I noticed, it was kind of a nice little touch. When these guys were making their entrance, when Sami Zayn, they showed a shot of him backstage going to the gorilla position. They had that kind of creepy, foreboding theme, almost like the old Hell in a Cell theme, the drum beat. They did that for both guys' entrance right before they came out. I haven't heard them use that in years. The video package building up this match was phenomenal. It had all the highlights of everything that is just built over the last several months that is built and culminated in this moment. And like I said, by the time the two of them were in the ring doing the ring intros, this thing felt like a big fucking deal, as it should. So I thought they did a tremendous job with that. They gave these guys plenty of time. I didn't clock it, but the match, it seemed like it went well over 20 minutes, maybe 25. Long match, really, really just excellent stuff. I mean, you got two world-class athletes in there, probably two of the best in all their developmental system, two guys that have no business being in developmental, who can hang with anybody on that main roster right now and excel. And you put them out there in the biggest match maybe of their career, and obviously they're going to knock it out of the park. And the fans were into it. The fans badly wanted to see Sami Zayn win the big one here. I thought the story they told about how these guys, you know, they would keep kicking out and all the near falls, and they were getting frustrated. What do I got to do to beat this guy? And they did the spot. They had a couple of ref bumps that were kind of silly. But the second ref bump, was the second one? I think maybe it was the second one. Played into one of the best parts of the match, which was Adrian Neville, desperate, had brought the championship in to use as a weapon. Sami cut him off. So now the belt is laying on the ground. The ref is down. Neville is down. Zayn is looking at the title. He's contemplating whether or not he should pick it up. The fans start a no chant. They're chanting no, 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 because they don't want him to get DQ'd. They don't want to see a bullshit DQ finish. And remember, the stipulation, it's not in the contract. It was Sammy's own wish, but if he lost, he was done. He was going to leave NXT. So there was something more than just the championship riding on this match, and he's so beloved, the people didn't want to see him lose. They didn't want to see him leave. So they're chanting, no, no, don't do it. And it brought me back to WrestleMania 8. If you remember the match for the Intercontinental title, Bret Hart and Roddy Piper, there was a great spot in that match. I think, again, the ref was probably down. There was a ref bump. And Bret was bleeding, and Piper brought the ring bell into the ring. Now, Piper was a brawler, and Piper was at his best, I think, as a heel. And he would do whatever he had to do to win. I mean, he was a brawler. He was a street fighter. He would do some really nefarious stuff to win his matches. So in this match, it was babyface against babyface. But we saw some of that old Roddy Piper come out. He had the bell. They had already established, you know, in the story building up to the match, that he and Bret were more than just friends. You know, there was a family connection there. I don't know if they're actually cousins or if they are actually related or not. I can't really recall, but there's some sort of family connection there. And Piper's standing in the ring. He's got the ring bell. He's ready to use it. He can win. He can win at WrestleMania. He's the champ. He can keep his title. All he's got to do is hit Bret in the head with the bell and wake up the ref, get the pin, and win. But he's conflicted. He doesn't know what to do. And he's looking at the fans, and the fans are telling him, don't do it. And finally, Piper's like, nah, fuck this. And he throws the bell away. And of course, in the end, it cost him the championship because he lost like a minute later. But that's what this reminded me of. As soon as I saw them doing this, I thought, WrestleMania 8, Piper and Bret, it just took me back to that match. And it's such an easy story to tell. And it's an easy way to get a reaction out of the crowd if they're into the match, which they were. So he just stalled and stalled and stalled, and then finally he's like, fuck that. And by the way, not the first F-bomb that Sami Zayn dropped in this match, which we'll talk more about in a second, because they constantly had to like mute the audio because he kept cursing. So he threw the belt away, and then Neville sneaks up from behind and got a near fall on a roll-up. Again, a great near fall there. There was another spot where Neville actually hit the red arrow, but Sami got the knees up and then put him right in the Koji clutch. And people thought, okay, this is going to be it. He's going to get the tap out, and Neville reached the ropes. There were so many great spots in this match. And it all built to the final sequence, which was... Oh, and by the way, the one thing I forgot, one of the most wicked moves in the whole match, was Neville at one point did a reverse Hurricanrana in reverse, and Sammy landed right on his head. Just spiked him right down into the mat for a near fall. That was awesome. But the finish came. Sammy got him in an exploder suplex into the turnbuckles in the corner, went to the opposite corner. The camera got a great close-up of his face, like this stern look, like he knew this is it. Runs into the other corner, hits the Huluva kick. Neville takes a great bump out of the corner, falls flat on his back. He gets the pin. The place goes crazy. This was the big payoff, the big feel-good moment that we've all been waiting for. And I said last week when I did my predictions, what do I think is going to happen? Is there going to be interference by Kevin Owens? And I said, my prediction and my hope for this match is that Sammy wins clean. Whatever they may do after the fact, he should just win the match clean, 1-2-3 in the middle. And I was so happy to see that's exactly what they did. Sometimes, as predictable as it may be, predictable in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's not always a bad thing. In WWE, it can be because we see so much of the same stuff. They're so predictable that there's just no life to the product. There's nothing to get excited about. Or, predictable as it may be, the stories they're telling suck. This story did not suck. This was awesome. And the only payoff that would have really made people happy, I think, is the one they gave us. And the place came unglued. I mean, I don't know how many people they can fit, maybe like 500 people in that building, but everybody was on their feet. They got close-ups of these people, their reaction. They were going crazy, like their favorite wrestler had just won the world championship, which I guess he did, for this brand anyway. And Sammy, he knows his character so well. He's kind of looking down at the title. He's rubbing his eyes like he can't believe it. He goes, "That's mine? Like, that belongs to me?" And it was just fantastic. And then the whole roster came out. There was a Sammy Callahan spotting. He was in there, not the only Sammy in the ring. Kaz and Enzo came out. I saw Tyler Breeze out there, which was a little weird. That didn't exactly fit his character to be all smiles clapping for Sami Zayn, but he was out there. Tyson Kidd was not out there, but Tyson Kidd tweeted a photo. He must have been watching at home because he posted a photo in front of his television holding his cat, which is just the only possible Tyson Kidd photo that makes sense. It's just perfect. Him and his cat watching the NXT special. So the whole roster came out. They hoisted Sami Zayn up on their shoulders and paraded him around the ring. Pat Patterson was out there as well. He's been a big champion, apparently, of Sami Zayn behind the scenes, fellow Canadian, you know? I don't know if they're both French-Canadian, but he's a big Sami Zayn supporter, so he was there. And Adrian Neville gets up. The music stops. People, you know, everyone backs away. They don't know what's going to happen here. And somebody wrote in to me, and I agree with this as well. I don't just make the Piper Bret Hart comparison from earlier. There's another Bret Hart comparison. At the end of this match, this whole sequence of events as it unfolded when the match was over, from the stuff with Neville, it looked like they were going to tease a confrontation, and instead Neville hugged him. So he's back to being a 100% babyface. They always teased it. They teased the heel turn with Neville, but never pulled the trigger. I like the way they did that. And now he's a gracious in defeat, 100% babyface. We can respect him again. I love that. The stuff with Kevin Owens that came shortly thereafter did remind me of this whole thing reminded me of Bret Owen from WrestleMania 10, from the new guy winning the championship. And Bret wasn't new, but he was kind of the face of that new generation era, and the roster coming out, all the baby faces to hoist him up on their shoulders, and there being somebody in the shadows. You know, with Bret, it was Owen. Owen came out, he kind of stared at Bret, disgusted by him, you know, winning the championship after Owen had just beaten his brother earlier in the night. And I remember Bret was like welcoming him into the ring. Owen wouldn't go. There was a lot of similarities here to that whole thing. I don't know if that was done intentionally or not. I know Kevin Owens took the Owens name. He named his son after Owen Hart. That's where the Owens name comes from. Wouldn't shock me at all to see them borrow some influence from the Bret Owens stuff in their feud now and in what we saw here. Everything about this was so perfect, right down to the final moment, right down to the big swerve at the end, because even if you were somebody who predicted, okay, Kevin Owens is going to turn on Sami Zayn, he's going to attack him, which was certainly a possibility, it wouldn't have shocked me, but this shocked me. So why? Why did it shock me, even though I kind of almost expected it? Because the way they did it was so perfect. They had Sami celebrating out there for so long. Kevin Owens was the first person to come out and hug him. and the people reacted to it. I mean, you would think Kevin Owens has been on this roster for at least 6 months. This was his first night, and people already knew. These guys are best friends. There's a connection there. There's a relationship there. So when they embraced, they popped huge. And Owens left when all the other members of the roster left to leave Sammy alone to celebrate. And Sammy leaves the ring. Kevin Owens comes back to hug his best friend. And the copyright notice comes on in the corner of the screen. And a lot of you guys made the mistake of turning the show off too early. You missed the big swerve. That sucks. But that just goes to show you, until they fade to black, don't turn the freaking show off. I thought that was genius what they did. They put the copyright notice on, so you thought they were coming to an end. Then the copyright notice disappeared. Sometimes that happens, where they won't fade to black right away. It'll be a few second delay. And Kevin Owens is holding up Sami Zayn's arm, and they're arm in arm now, walking to the back, and then he lowers the boom. And Kevin Owens shoves him down on the ground, right on that steel ramp. People are going out. They're freaking out. They can't believe what they're seeing. And then he power bombs him on the ring apron. That looks like it sucked. I don't care how much extra padding they may have put there for that spot. That looked like it sucked to take that move. It was brutal. And the fans reacted like it was a brutal move. They started booing Owens. William Regal came out. He was so angry, filled with rage. How could you do this? And Owens never made eye contact with Regal. He was stone-faced. He just kept looking straight, walked to the back like a sociopath, like nothing affects him. And they did a big injury angle at the end, calling for the doctor to come out. They stretchered him out, although they didn't air that, but they stretchered Sami Zayn out into an ambulance. I thought, from start to finish, this was perfect. It was flawless in every way. I loved everything about this. It was just, it was great. And to go back to the F-bombs, Sammy must have dropped at least four or five of those things from during the match to the post-match. Again, he was excited. I don't blame the guy. I like seeing that kind of emotion out of these people. But Rob Naylor, who used to work at NXT, he used to work side-by-side with Dusty Rhodes and was very well-liked, and I still can't understand why they let him go. He was following the show. I follow him on Twitter. And as soon as Sammy started dropping F-bomb after F-bomb when that match was over, I said, I got to see what Naylor has to say. And sure enough, he tweeted, so in trouble for these hard F-bombs being dropped. I guarantee it. So hopefully it was just, you know, somebody going over to him saying, listen, you can't do that. You got to be careful. Hopefully it's not the sort of thing that gets him into a lot of trouble. I mean, in this company, the stories you hear, you never fucking know. You look at somebody the wrong way, you could be in the doghouse for 6 months. So hopefully it doesn't turn out to be a whole big deal for Sami Zayn. He was emotional, you know. He was caught up in the moment. I like that kind of thing. But by the fourth or fifth one, even I was like, dude, you're not doing yourself any favor. Like, calm down. Watch your mouth. And so, I wasn't shocked to see Naylor tweet that out. Hopefully it's not a big deal. But when the show was over, I was just left with the thought that a lot of you guys had. How is this the same company? How is the same company that puts out 3 hours of this drivel and bullshit every single Monday night the same company that puts this kind of show out? And I guess the answer is simple. You know, Vince and Kevin Dunn and all of them don't really have any creative input into the show. It's Triple H. It's Dusty Rhodes. There may be another writer they have helping them. I don't know who the real main point person is. But at the end of the day, developmental, NXT, is Triple H's baby. So we can say all the things we want to say about Triple H, and a lot of what CM Punk had to say is probably very true as far as things, at least with him, that happened in Triple H. How come he wins this match and beats this guy? It doesn't make sense. He's just trying to put himself over. I've always been able to separate that and give Triple H a lot of credit for what he's done with NXT. You will never find me criticizing Triple H on this show for what he has done with NXT. I've given him props before. I will give it to him again now. If he was the brains behind this show, kudos to him. Thank you, because this was a phenomenal effort. And if it's a sign of what's to come in the future when Vince steps aside, and I guess he's never going to step aside, so when Vince croaks, whenever that may be, and the time comes, if Triple H is the one to take over, my only hope is that Raw will never become what NXT is. That's just not going to happen. They have too many masters to serve, from the network to sponsors and everything else. Raw will never be NXT, but they can take elements from NXT and incorporate them into Raw. And that's, I think, the best that you could ask for. And I really think it would improve the product. in terms of just how they tell their stories, some of the people they use, if they want to call some of them up, some of the production techniques. There's so many little things they could borrow, I think, from NXT that can make Raw even just a little bit better. Why wouldn't she do that? It's incredible to me just to think that the same company is responsible for those two shows. I cannot recommend this show enough. I think most of you by now have seen it. If you haven't, I don't know what the hell you're waiting for. Sign up for the network. It's worth it for 1 month at least. Sign up and check this show out. You will not regret it. It's the best wrestling show you'll see all week. It may be the best wrestling show you see all month. We'll see how TLC goes. I think it's going to be very hard for TLC to top what we saw last Thursday. And it's everything I loved about NXT. It's why I've been reviewing this show on my show now for over a year and a half. I've been reviewing NXT. It's one of the more fun things that I am able to do every single week. And this week was the payoff, and it was everything I could have hoped for and more. I two thumbs up. I cannot recommend this show enough. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to The Sound Off. I get questions from people asking, how can I support the podcast? Well, the best way to support the show is simple. Just keep listening each and every week. Keep spreading the word about it to friends and family and retweet or share links to the episodes on Twitter and Facebook. But beyond that, you can contribute by making a PayPal donation or by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Making a PayPal donation is simple. Just log on to thesolemonster.com and you'll see the PayPal donation box on the right-hand side of the page. Enter whatever amount you'd like and click the Make a Donation button. That's it. Or sign up for a free Audible trial by entering our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. From there, you can sign up free for 30 days, which helps us out. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. And you can browse through their library of over 150,000 titles. Listen to your books at home, on the commute to work, at the gym, whenever, wherever. Sign up at audibletrial.com/solemonster or visit thesolemonster.com to make a donation right now. And thank you for supporting The Sound Off. Some TNA notes here. Apparently, I made an appearance on the Best of 2014 episode of Impact that aired this past week. Of course I did. I was one of the best things on that show all year. Are you kidding me? God knows I was on the show plenty of times. I'm not surprised they picked me up on the Best of show. Destination America. TNA making their debut on the network on January 7th. They have announced details of their debut. It'll be a live broadcast. Well, live to tape. I mean, it'll be on like a two-hour delay. Wednesday, January 7th from 9 to 11. It'll be televised from the Manhattan Center in New York City. And then the show, the following week, will move to its permanent home on Friday nights from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. starting January 16th. And when I read that, I just thought to myself, wow. Wow. Friday night. They settled on Friday night as the night for this show. Unbelievable. The live broadcast on the 7th will feature a main event for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship, Bobby Roode defending against Lashley. And I love how in the press release they call it a decisive rematch in this epic trilogy. I don't know if I'd go that far. They've had some good matches. I don't know if I'd call it an epic trilogy. I don't think anything about TNA these days is epic, except some of the decisions that their management makes is epically bad. But yeah, Lashley and Roode 3, I think this is their third match. They'll have Kurt Angle, Jeff Hardy, Gail Kim, EC3, who I don't believe can wrestle. I think he had surgery on his bicep or tricep, so he's going to be out for a while. But they're all advertised for that first show. They're going to have an encore that airs at 11 p.m. as soon as it ends. And they have a second show that they're going to be debuting on January 17th. That's a Saturday. Saturday's at 10 a.m. It's called Impact Wrestling Unlocked. My guess is it's just a highlight show, a clip show, maybe something similar to the old WWF Mania show, Livewire, that used to air on Saturday mornings. You know, for me, it's Destination DVR. You know, so much for Impact being the network's flagship show. You don't put your flagship show in a Friday night time slot. I mean, SmackDown survived on Friday nights, but they never had the same audience they had when they used to be on Thursdays. Now they're moving back to Thursdays because it just makes sense for them to do so. Why you would take Impact and put it on Friday night, I have no idea. And I don't want to hear, well, you can't do it on Mondays. Obviously, you can't do it on Mondays. Well, there's also Lucha Underground and NXT is going to be on Wednesdays, and of course SmackDown is on Thursdays. Let me tell you something. Lucha Underground airs at 8 p.m. for an hour. So there's no issue there. It would lead right into Impact. NXT, I think, first airs at 4 p.m. now on the WWE Network every week, and then it's archived on demand, which is how most people probably watch it. That's how I watch it. I watch it whenever I get home. You know, I'm not there at 4 o'clock watching NXT. So I don't see either one of those shows preventing Destination America from keeping Impact on Wednesdays if they wanted to keep them there. I just think the whole move is a head-scratcher to me. It was a questionable move for SmackDown, let alone for TNA, on a weak network. Discovery and Netflix, supposedly, are in discussions to bring Discovery programming to the streaming service. That was the headline this week that I read. Destination America is a Discovery network, so the implication there is, hey, maybe if they work out a deal, Impact can be streamed on Netflix. That would be huge for TNA if it happens, and it's still very far away from happening, even if it does, because it potentially broadens the audience for them. I mean, obviously, if you can get Impact on Netflix, that would be huge. I don't know how much more of an audience it would bring in, but it would be only a positive move for TNA, so that's a story, I think, to follow as the months progress. They also have a new logo they debuted for Impact. It's on the poster for the show. I'm kind of divided on it. I don't think it's a horrible logo. Like, for example, I think it's better than the new WWE logo, which I'm still not a huge fan of. I don't know. They kind of have like an MMA influence in there. They have like the six-sided ring, I guess it is, or like an octagon graphic in there. And I don't know. I'm not completely sold on it, but it's not a big deal. We're splitting hairs here. They wanted a fresh start, so there's going to be new graphics, new logo, new everything. That's all well and good. They have to do that. There should be a fresh look to the show. You should change the logo. You should change, in some way, the look of the show. The key is going to be when that show airs on January 7th, because you can change everything in the world, okay? You can take a turd and put a bow on it. At the end of the day, it's still a turd, okay, to use that as an analogy. Not that I'm saying Impact is a turd, but what I'm saying is, they can take all of these different measures, as they should. The only thing that matters is when Impact goes back on the air. And if the show looks the same and feels the same and nothing really feels different about it, then what's the difference? So they've already started to take these measures. Mike Tenay is out. Josh Matthews is in, which was a necessary move. Even if you think Mike Tenay is a better announcer than Josh Matthews, he probably is. But for God's sakes, Mike Tenay's been there forever. He's been there since the Stone Age era of TNA. They need a new voice. Matthews is that new voice. I hope it works out. It's about time. It's a move that's long overdue. So they seem to be making all the right moves, but the only thing that matters is what happens when they go on the air January 7th. And then we'll know for sure how different things are truly going to be. Lucha Underground, Episode 7, aired this past week. This show is headlined by what they billed as an uninterrupted 25-minute main event. And that's exactly what they delivered. On Raw, it's an uninterrupted 25-minute opening promo, so I can appreciate the difference between the two shows. Open with King Cuerno beating Superfly, who we were told by Vampiro is a worldwide superstar. Drago is up in the balcony with his lizard dragon tongue watching Cuerno's match, so that feud is still going. We got a Pentagon Jr. hype video showing him doing karate moves to guys and breaking arms. He comes out with Chavo Guerrero next for Chavo's match with Phoenix. It's a good match. Chavo won with a frog splash. Sexy Star, who was out there with Phoenix in his corner, gets on the mic after the match and tells Chavo that he is coming back. The he, of course, being Blue Demon. We got a hype video for a newcomer, big jacked-up white dude named Cage. That being the former Brian Cage, who was in TNA for a while. I think he did their gut check. And so he was on TV for maybe a few weeks. I'm not a man, I'm a machine, he says. Kind of like Roman Reigns, if you watched his promo on the NXT special. Very much. Sounded like a machine. And then it was main event time. That's how quickly we got to the main event. This was all about the main event. It was Big Rick, Prince Puma, and Johnny Mundo in a three-way ladder match for $100,000 cash. This was a crazy match, and I laughed at Big Rick attempting to climb the ladder at first, and then just giving up and calling Cisco and Cortez out to do the climbing for him. I can't possibly do this match justice. You really just need to see it for yourselves. Non-stop action from start to finish. Danny Trejo, Machete, was at ringside for the match. That's the Robert Rodriguez connection right there, since he launched the El Rey Network. He owns it. It's his. And he and Trejo work together a lot. So I'm sure he called in a little favor, and there he was at ringside. 1-6 spot was Big Rick pressing Puma overhead and dropping him on a ladder that was bridged between the ring apron and the guardrail. The ladder broke in half. I don't know if it was gimmicked or not. Their ladders look different because everything's supposed to look run down and rusty. I mean, it may well have been a legitimate ladder. I'm sure it probably was, but I just don't know. I mean, there's so much that goes into the production of this show. Maybe they have props. Maybe it was gimmicked. Who knows? Either way, it looked like it sucked. And I think that pretty much eliminated him for the rest of the match. Johnny Mundo, I don't think we saw Puma again after that. Big Rick used two ladders then to climb. The dude is so gigantic, he needed one leg on each ladder just to climb up and stay steady. Johnny Mundo climbed up the ladder after him, kicked him in the nuts. Rick fell to the mat, looked like Mundo had victory well in hand, when all of a sudden this guy in a lucha mask runs into the ring, knocks Mundo off. Matt Stryker tried to play it up like he was a fan. What's this fan doing in the ring? Then the guy pulled the mask off, and still, nobody knew who he was. I have no idea who he was. He looked like a normal guy. There was nothing impressive about him. Stryker seemed to think he seen the guy before, but he didn't identify who he is. Back in the ring, Cuerno. Dario Cueto, his goons, were climbing the ladders, trying to retrieve the briefcase for Big Rick. But Johnny Mundo springboards off the top rope, lands on the ladder, a la Shelton Benjamin, something we've seen him do in Money in the Bank matches before. He pushes the other ladder with the two of them over, tips it over, they fall down, and Mundo grabs the briefcase for the win. Dario Cueto comes out, he congratulates Johnny on winning the money and says he wants his key back now. That's the key that Mundo stole from him in the bathroom last week, that I couldn't figure out what the significance of the key was. I still have no idea what the key is for, but it must be something important. Maybe it's the key to the temple? I don't know. Mundo, being the good sport that he is, punches Cueto in the face, knocks him out, and then leaves the key laying on his chest. And that was the show. It was built all around that main event. It was a spectacular match. It was nice that it wasn't interrupted by commercials and plugs for the network, plugs for the app. Let's see what's trending on Twitter. Who gives a fuck? We didn't have any of that. It was just a great wrestling match, uninterrupted. It's all you can ask for. Great action. They actually have the full match up on their YouTube channel, so even if you don't have El Rey, which is probably most of you, you can go on YouTube, find the match, watch the whole thing from start to finish. It is well worth 25 minutes of your time. This week's episode coming up is the final one of the year, and then they're back on January 7th, the same night Impact debuts on Destination America. The description for this week's episode reads, Dario Cueto sets two 10-way matches, the Boyle Heights Battle Royal. In this can't-miss event, he promises the victor a prize that is more valuable than the $100,000 he offered when the temple was first opened. So that's coming up this week, and then they take a break, and they are back next year. So let's get to the mailbag here. We didn't have one last week. I want to get to your questions before we wrap this up. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Let's start with an audio question from Kennedy in Orlando.
What's up, Solemn Monster? It's Kennedy from Orlando, Florida. Which of the two organizations blew it the most? WCW, when they got Bret Hart after the whole Montreal Screwjob went down, or WWE, when WCW went out of business and they started the invasion angle? Which company blew it the most?
Boy, they messed up on both those things, didn't they? Those are two big things that both companies messed up on, but you got to go with the invasion. I mean, there was much more money to be made on the invasion. The invasion was, we're talking about a collection of different guys that they could have used, that they should have used. With Bret Hart, we're talking about one guy. And had they done things a little bit differently, again, they had a guy who had a rightful claim to the WWE Championship, and they did almost nothing with him. I mean, it's kind of amazing the way they dropped the ball with Bret Hart. But the invasion, I mean, all the different matches they could have done, and bringing Bischoff in a year earlier maybe, which and they may have had discussions with him, I don't really remember. The thing is, there were so many guys they did not bring in at first who eventually they did bring in. I never expected them to bring all of them in at the same time, but you can't tell me that had they paid a little extra money, they could have gotten two or three of those guys, whether it was Flair, whether it was Bischoff, Hogan, whoever. That could have made, having them right out of the gate, that could have made all the difference in the world. You were going to make that money back hand over fist. And they left so much money on the table, it's frustrating. So the invasion easily was more of a fuck up, I think, than what WCW did or didn't do with Bret Hart. Noel Mercado from the Bronx. I was on the WWE Network watching the Great American Bash from 2007. And it had a match nobody really likes to talk about, which is John Cena versus Bobby Lashley. Do you think this match is underrated? Also, do you think WWE missed the opportunity to put the title on Lashley? I think the reason people don't really talk about that match is because we were all kind of still in a daze. That was only a few weeks. I don't even know if it was a full month after the Benoit stuff happened. That pay-per-view, I don't remember much of anything about what happened on that show, and I'm pretty sure I watched it. But that match is forgotten about, I think, largely because it came right after the Benoit stuff. And, yeah, there's a lot about that time period, honestly, that I just don't remember. Even SummerSlam that year. I think it may have had a John Cena-Randy Orton main event, but I don't remember. I just don't remember because I was kind of, in a day, still hung over from all that stuff that had happened. But I think that's why it doesn't get talked about. It gets forgotten about a lot because of that. Putting the title on Lashley, you know, maybe, I'm not even sure that he was ready at that point, but the timing of it probably would not have made much sense just because what kind of impact would it have had? I really do think that people were still thinking about the Benoit stuff, talking about the Benoit stuff. I don't think a Bobby Lashley championship victory back then would have really made the kind of impact it should have. You know, they may have actually done him a disservice to put the belt on him at that point. Maybe they should have waited. In the end, they didn't put it on him at all. But I just think that that thing just completely overshadowed everything that happened in the month or two that followed. To the point, like I said, I can't even remember much else that happened that summer. Clip sent this in. I was listening to an MMA show on SiriusXM, and the host said that CM Punk's entry into UFC is nothing like Brock Lesnar signing, because Lesnar had an athletic background as a collegiate wrestler, while Punk played no sports at either the high school or collegiate level. He even went so far as to say that Punk was not an athlete. I disagree with the guy. I don't think you can be a wrestler as good as Punk was and not be considered an athlete. What are your thoughts? Is CM Punk an athlete? Absolutely. I consider CM Punk to be an athlete. It just goes to the whole argument of, are wrestlers athletes? I think that wrestlers are more athletic and some of the best athletes in the world, even more so than basketball players and football players. You know, if for no other reason, look at the training that these guys have to go through. And you'll have world-class athletes on occasion, celebrities who were brought in over the years to do a wrestling match, and they get blown up. And when it's all said and done, they'll admit, they'll do interviews, and they'll say, man, that training for wrestling, and they may only train for a few weeks for like one big match. Look at Lawrence Taylor back in the day. Now, granted, he was retired and he was older, but these guys will readily admit, I've never been through anything like wrestling training before. Wrestling training kicks your ass, and for you to be able to get through it and become a star on television for WWE, you have to be a world-class athlete. And I don't care if you've got a beer belly, if you've got a six-pack, there's different types of athletes. Lots of football players are big SOBs with big bellies, and they don't have six-pack abs, okay? But that doesn't mean they're not athletes either. Athletes come in all shapes and sizes. So to say that CM Punk and pro wrestlers are not athletes is bullshit. They're some of the best athletes in the world. And you can say CM Punk, he's this skinny fat guy, and you know he doesn't have a very impressive physique. So what? He trained just like everybody else, and he worked out just like everybody else. So his body type is not the same as Finn Balor or Triple H. He's not as big. So what? That doesn't mean he's not an athlete. So absolutely he is. Matt from Canterbury, UK. What are your thoughts on a new faction in WWE featuring Sheamus as the lead, with Finn Balor and Becky Lynch being called up to the main roster, and have them managed by Fit Finlay in kind of an Irish Celtic heel faction? It could give some sort of renewed character development. Balor and Lynch a way of getting brought up and the recognition of being associated with a top name, and have Finlay being the main talker and having his previous WWE career as a new way of giving the group some persona and direction. I am not a fan of that idea. I just think there's so much more potential in Finn Balor as a single and a single babyface. And this idea that, well, he'll be associated with a big name. Is Sheamus really that big of a name? And let's be honest here. How big of a name is Sheamus right now in WWE? He was pushed hard at first after his little stint in the ECW brand, and he beat John Cena, became WWE champion, former world champion. He certainly has been positioned as a big star. He's been a main eventer at times during his career. But look at the last year and a half of Sheamus's career. Is he really a top guy? Would Finn Balor really gain a lot by being associated with Sheamus? Is being associated with Sheamus the same as being associated with Randy Orton or John Cena? I don't see it the same way. And frankly, I think Finn Balor could be a much bigger star than Sheamus. Much bigger. So just because they all have the same accent or they're from the same place, let's put them all together in a faction, I don't really see how that does Finn Balor any good. I think he's going to be fast-tracked to the roster no matter what. I can't say the same for Becky Lynch. But I don't want Finn Balor's career to hinge upon, you know, Becky Lynch's career. The two should be completely separate. And I don't think Finn Balor should be pigeonholed as being Irish or Celtic, or he should just be himself. You know, he's got an accent. So what? So what? Some guys get kind of grouped together like that, and I don't think it does their careers any good. Hey, this guy's, you know, Muslim, so let's take, you know, these Muslim guys and put them in a faction. And you know full well what WWE would do with those guys. I mean, God forbid if Vince McMahon finds out that Sami Zayn is Arabic. I mean, holy shit, or that he speaks Arabic or has Arab, you know, writing on his tights. Forget about it. I mean, we'll have the new Muhammad Hassan on our hands. That's just how the guy thinks. So I don't think it does Finn Balor any favors. I don't really, you know, care. Oh, it's good for Sheamus, too, because he's part of a faction. I don't give a fuck. I care more about Finn Balor because I think the sky's the limit with him. I think he's got a ton of potential. And I don't want to see him limited by being associated with guys just because, again, they have the same accent or they're from the same place. I just don't think that does him any good. I mean, I see what you're trying to do. I'm not saying it's a horrible, terrible idea. I just wouldn't do it with him. Drew writes in, WCW Spring Stampede 1994 has got to be the best WCW pay-per-view of all time. Possibly the best pay-per-view of any company ever. No real special significance or anything on the line storyline-wise, but it was the first WCW pay-per-view that mentioned Hulk Hogan teasing his arrival. It had a great mix of stars of old, like Flair, Steamboat, and Rick Rude, and new, like Steve Austin, Mick Foley, and DDP. Why doesn't this show get its just desserts as the pinnacle of what a wrestling show could be at a time when the business was not doing so well? The focus here was on the matches and not the promos, celebrities, and other time-consuming nonsense. This is WCW at a time when it was still wrestling before the emergence of Hogan and Friends, and Vince Russo watered it down to sports entertainment. WCW Spring Stampede 1994 equals the best pay-per-view of all time. What are your thoughts? I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't call it the best pay-per-view of all time, but I would agree with you. I don't think it gets enough credit for being as good as it was. I mean, I have the card here in front of me, and just looking at this card, I mean, it was headlined by a Ric Flair-Ricky Steamboat match for the World Championship. So they were trying to recapture some of the magic of their series of matches from 1989. I don't think they quite did that, but it was a great match. Even if that was the weakest match they had, and I'm not sure it was, but even if it was, Flair and Steamboat together were so freaking awesome that even their weakest match was better than most of the other matches that you would see at that time. So they had a great match on this show in the main event. And there was another, the Nasty Boys. The Nasty Boys, of all people, had a tag team match with Cactus Jack and Max Payne, who you may know better as Man Mountain Rock in WWE for a little while, anyway. They had a tag team match. It might have been the second match on the show. It was early in the card, and it was like a hardcore, I think Falls Count Anywhere, Anything Goes brawl. This match was unbelievable. In terms of how brutal it was. I mean, this was what a street fight should be. These guys just beat the shit out of each other with reckless abandon. They paid no attention to their own bodies. Mick Foley The final spot of the match is sickening. He took an unprotected shovel shot to the face. And I think he may have actually fallen, because back then WCW had that ramp that went to the ring, and I think he actually may have fallen off the ramp on the spot. He got hit so hard with this shovel by, I think, Sags, hit him in the face. Oh, my God. The fact he was still conscious is unbelievable to me. Find the match. I'm sure it's on YouTube. You'll see what I'm talking about. So that match was not a technical masterpiece by any means, nor should it have been. That match is exactly what it had to be, and it was brutal as hell. And I don't know if that predated what we saw in ECW, if that match opened up Paul Heyman's eyes, and that's when we started seeing matches like that in ECW. I don't want to give WCW credit for it, but just the timeline of everything. That was the first time we ever saw a match like that, anything like that, in WCW. And it was unbelievable. It was unbelievably brutal is what it was. So that match and the Steamboat Flair match, I think, are the two matches that stand out to me most about that show. They had a DDP Johnny B. Bad match. They had Dustin Rhodes in the bunkhouse match with Bunkhouse Buck. I don't remember. Was that the match that was on the back of a truck? I think it might have been. It was a match, like, they had a match that was pre-taped on, like, the back of a moving pickup truck. And I think they bled, or Dustin Rhodes bled, and there was a very strict no-blading policy in WCW at that time, and he got fired for it. And that actually may have paved the way for him to come to WWE as Goldust. So if that's the case, then maybe it happened later on. Maybe this wasn't the match. But they had Brian Pillman and Steven Regal, Steve Austin and the Great Muta, which actually was not a great match. I didn't watch this show that long ago. I actually watched it on the network several months ago. I remember that being kind of disappointing. And Sting and Rick Rude was okay, if I remember correct. Actually, I think the very next match they had, if this was April of 94, I think end of April, beginning of May, is when Sting and Rude had their match in Japan where Rude suffered the back injury. And that pretty much ended his career. So this was one of Rick Rude's last matches on this show. So top to bottom, not every match on the show is a winner. That's why I can't call this the best pay-per-view of all time, but it's way up there, and I don't think it does get enough credit. Trevor from Coconut Creek, Florida. I was watching the Funeral Parlor segment with Undertaker and Ultimate Warrior. Why wasn't there a feud between the two, or did I miss something? They did have a feud. It was a house show feud. I know, because I was at one of those house shows. They had a body bag match. They used to have a series of body bag matches. I don't know if they ever had a casket match, but the body bag was the big stipulation at that time. But they never did it on television. There was never a big Ultimate Warrior Undertaker match on a pay-per-view or Saturday Night's Main Event or Superstars. There were actually quite a few feuds back then. Wrestling was just different. There were so many feuds that started or that they kind of teased, and maybe they did it on the house shows, but it never made television because you would never see a big match like that on Superstars, and there were so few pay-per-views back then. I guess this was never just a priority for them. Plus, I think the timing of it, if they were feuding in 91, the summer of 91, Warrior was gone shortly after that. So it's entirely possible the plan was to do an Undertaker-Warrior match on pay-per-view at some point, but Warrior got fired. I think the timeline kind of works there. Same thing with Warrior and Jake Roberts, right? They did the thing where Warrior was going through all of these exercises that Jake Roberts would put him through to prepare for a feud with The Undertaker. He wanted Warrior to go to the dark side, and it culminated with a Warrior being trapped in a room full of poisonous snakes, and so Jake turned heel on him. And it was right after that, like a month later, that Warrior got fired. So I think there was a better chance of seeing Warrior and Jake Roberts on a pay-per-view, or maybe on opposite Survivor Series teams, and we never saw it. But you know what? We ended up with the awesome feud with Randy Savage and Jake Roberts, my all-time favorite feud in WWE history. Very underrated, so I can't complain. Jake from Sydney. What would be a better WrestleMania seller, Sting versus Triple H or Sting versus The Undertaker? At the moment, I would rather see Sting against Hunter because there is a story behind it with Sting causing the Authority to lose at Survivor Series. The reason I would rather see that than Undertaker is because the streak is over with no meaning behind the match. If Lesnar did not end the streak at WrestleMania and he was still undefeated, it would have meant more. Well, I disagree on that. We'll get to that in a second, but Sting versus Undertaker is easily the more marketable match. I think Sting and Triple H would be a better match than Sting versus Undertaker would be. But Taker and Sting is the better draw. And I think it would actually be very easy to make the match mean something without the streak hanging over it. And I've said this on the show before. It's very simple. However you arrive at getting these guys on television together, you build to a match that you make it very clear in advance. This is it. This is the Undertaker's last match. This is Sting's one and only match in WWE. The only reason he ever came to WWE was because he wanted one match with The Undertaker. One and done. So you know that going in, wow, this is a big deal. This is for sure the last time we're ever going to see The Undertaker in a ring at WrestleMania, and it's the only time that we'll ever see Sting inside a WWE ring. If you make that clear going in that it's a retirement match for both guys, the question then becomes, who goes over? Who's going to win in their last match? There's got to be a winner. There's got to be a loser. You can't have a schmoz. You can't have a draw at WrestleMania. Somebody's going to win, and somebody's going to lose, and it's their final match. And that right there is the big draw. It's a double draw. It's the draw of finally doing Undertaker and Sting, which people have been creaming themselves about for years. I mean, they don't care how awful the match might be. They just want to see it. So you'll have that contingent of people who would pay for it no matter what. But then you throw in the added stipulation, knowing it's their final match, and that makes it a draw all by itself. I mean, Ric Flair had that match with Shawn Michaels, right? That turned out to be his retirement match at WrestleMania 24. That was a draw. This would be, I think, an even bigger draw. So it'd be very easy to do it without the streak. You don't need the streak to make that match mean something. Earl from Salem, New Hampshire. Is there any truth to the story of Shane Douglas teaming with Marty Jannetty as the Rockers for a brief period in 1990 while Shawn Michaels was out with a knee injury? If so, is there any video footage available? I am not aware of there being any fan cam footage. It would have to be fan cam because it was only on house shows, and actually, it did happen. It did happen several times. I had to go back and check what month it was, because I remember hearing about it, and in checking, and you could find house show results online. I mean, the way I usually do it, just type in, like in a simple Google search, if you type in WWF results, you know, 1990, the first link that comes up is all the house show results from that year. And if you scroll down, you'll find it. It was in August of 1990. They actually teamed up at least three, four, maybe five times, I think, that month. And that was it. That's the only record of it I could find. So yes, believe it or not, Shane Douglas was a Rocker at one point. Mind-blowing. And finally, Oliver brought this to my attention, and I wanted to plug it here. Mike Morgan is the promoter for American Championship Wrestling Entertainment, or Ace Wrestling. It's an independent here on the East Coast. And last month, I don't know how many of you heard about this, because it was a big story here. His sons were involved in just a terrible accident in New Jersey when they were struck by a car at a hit-and-run accident. They were walking on the sidewalk. The car jumped the curb, nearly struck the sister. She narrowly avoided being hit, but the car ended up hitting both of her brothers instead. Michael was one of them. He was hit directly and had to have his leg amputated as a result. Unfortunately, he later passed away. I think last week he passed away. Adrian was also hit by the car. He received injuries. He was thrown in the air and got impaled on a fence. I mean, just really awful stuff. Police just arrested the driver last week. They found the scumbag hiding under a bed in his cousin's house, so at least they got the bastard. Anyway, the family is going through a tough time right now. They're going to need all the support they can get. So if you would like to donate, they have a GoFundMe page set up. It's at GoFundMe.com/Michael and Adrian. GoFundMe.com/Michael and Adrian. I think they're looking to raise $20,000. They've raised nearly $16,000. A lot of that money was raised before Michael died last week, but there's still going to be a lot of expenses involved. So if you have anything to spare and you want to contribute, that's the page to go to. And thanks to Oliver for bringing that page to my attention. I'm happy to mention it. That's going to wrap up the mailbag. Keep sending in your questions, thesolemonster@gmail.com. If you have not heard from me, or if your question hasn't been used, it's because I am still going through emails from at least 6 weeks ago. I made some progress yesterday. Some of you heard from me, but it's gonna take time. It's just I've been so busy. All the audio I've been doing, I just haven't had a chance to devote to going through questions. I'm starting to finally do that, but keep sending them on in. I do read everything you guys send me. Also, take the time to nominate the Sound Off for Show of the Year. Voting is still going on for the nomination process for the 2015 Wrestling Radio Awards. Go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com. You'll see two fields. Type in the full name of the podcast, Solid Monster Sounds Off. Type that in the first field and include our URL, thesolidmonster.com. Then in the second field, you can vote for your favorite interview of the year, whether it was the one I did with Matthew, the Botchamania guy, or any interview. Chris Jericho just did some really good interviews with Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. You could vote for those. Steve Austin and Vince McMahon, why not vote for that as your favorite interview of the year on the Steve Austin Show? You have to fill something in that second field, so be sure to do that. You can vote daily, every single day, so tell your friends, keep voting. I have no idea when the nomination period ends, but it is still ongoing, so please show your support for the Sound Off and cast your vote for us. Also, don't forget to vote in our poll. What do you think was the best Sound Off intro for an episode in 2014? You got 10 choices to choose from, the top 10 best of 2014. I'm going to post the link on my Twitter page as soon as I'm done recording. It'll be up on Facebook as well, so that's how you can find the link. Go on Twitter, go on Facebook. You can vote one time and let me know what you think is the best intro of 2014. Voting ends at 10 a.m. Eastern next Sunday, so you have a week to vote, and we'll announce the winner on the Sound Off next weekend. So please take the time to vote in our poll. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster, and check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolomonster. We are over 11,100 subscribers right now and growing each and every day. Bunch of Sound Off extras are up there, including the one I talked about earlier in the podcast. So definitely check that out, youtube.com/TheSolomonster. Hit the subscribe button. Make a PayPal donation on thesolidmonster.com. You can use our Audible link as well and buy a t-shirt, prowrestlingtees.com/solidmonstersoundsoff. I think that pretty much goes through all the plugs. I think I'm done. So enjoy TLC tonight. We'll be back next weekend, episode 360. 360! I think of Gorilla Monsoon whenever I say that. We'll be back next weekend with a brand new show. So until then, be well, stay safe, have a great week, enjoy TLC. Hopefully they can somehow find a way to top NXT TakeOver. I don't know how, but they'll try. We'll see you next week. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
If we get another John Cena versus Randy Orton match, so help me God, I will put a voodoo curse on everybody in that company. I think I'm joking. Just try me. I have my little voodoo doll I bought when I was in New Orleans for WrestleMania. I'm looking at it right now across the room. It's right over there. It's got a white pin for good luck and a black pin for evil. Don't make me go black on your ass.
Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.